Blog Talk Radio.
This is Entertainment Life on the Sasha Marina Show, a show about the entertainment and music industry, where you get to hear from the top and up-and-coming stars, from amateurs to professionals. They're all just working hard for success. This show is to give those the opportunity to speak about their talents and what they're doing to succeed in their dreams. And now, here's your host, Sasha Marina.
Hello, hello, everyone. Good morning and good afternoon to some. This is your host, Sasha Marina, and you're tuned into the Sasha Marina Show. Today I have a very cool guest. He goes by the name of Carl Lindbergh. He is the creator, the man behind the Bunny Massacre. If you guys have not heard of this, I guess, franchise, it's literally a bunny massacre. Not that the guy is massacring bunnies, it's just a bunny doing all the massacre. And it's very, I had the pleasure to see the latest film. Yes, because there's more than one part, obviously. And I was kind of shocked because I didn't know what to expect. You know, you just see this funny suit dude and a chainsaw, and I'm like, you know, this, like, how ironic. You're going to choose, like, the cutest animal on earth to do all this killing. So definitely there's a lot to ask Carl and why his choice of animal, I guess, for one, and so forth. So without further ado, I'm going to have Carl live on the air. Hello, Carl. How are you?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Hello. So tell us more about the whole franchise and why you wanted to create the Bunny Man franchise, the Bunny Man Massacre.
Well, I think kind of what you touched on a little bit was just that it was just a unique and different approach to something in the horror genre, and it wasn't something people could really expect or know what to expect from one of these films.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the whole reason for being, is just to try to do something unique and different. And I'm sure when you watch part two, when you see the bunny man on the school bus, then you kind of realize that these filmmakers are doing something a little different.
Yeah. No, and after... Well, obviously, I haven't seen the first, but I saw this one. And like I did mention, yes, it was a little bit of a shock because, like, in the first scene, you're like, okay, well, you know, what's going on? And then all of a sudden it gets ugly. And then but as you progress in the film, it kind of, the attention kind of turns away. It's like 50-50 for this Bunny Man because I kind of start feeling bad for him at some point, you know, because of the other character that's kind of running him. But yeah, I find that it's very interesting, and I'm not a horror fanatic, but I guess this one has something else that, you know, that can cater to other people. So you created a production company called No One Cares. Why that name for your production company?
Well, as you've seen in the films, I kind of have a dark sense of humor. And so that kind of goes along with everything I do in life. And, you know, usually you see a production company name in the beginning of a movie. And I really think 99% of the people just don't care what company is making the movie. So I just kind of called everyone out on it, including myself. And that's where the name came from. And that's, I guess, I'm kind of stuck with it now.
Yeah, it kind of is true because you see the production, you see their... Some of them have nice intros. Some of them just have their logo. And then you're like, okay. Some of them you haven't heard, and obviously the ones that you have heard, they're big Hollywood flicks. So I thought that was definitely creative. You know, what was your feedback with the first Bunny Man film that actually, you know, gave you the inspiration to continue on the franchise?
It was a mixed reaction. I think basically I make the decisions of what films I want to make based on my own personal interests, but I felt as though getting feedback from part one, it kind of reinforced the idea that I could have done it better. And so then I kind of took the lessons I learned from part one and what I failed at, and then I tried to change that and become successful with part two. So that's why it's more emphasis on the bad guys this time around, and, you know, the victims are not, they're just kind of there just as an excuse for the villains to do something, but it really centers on the more interesting characters, which were Bunny Man and the bad people, as opposed to random teenagers that get killed.
That was
inspiration basically with two, is take what worked from part one and then flip it around, and hopefully part two will be a much better film, which it seems as though it's more warmly received. So.
Okay. And has this film done a festival run yet, or did you just release the DVD? How is the process right now with the Bunny Man?
It's been airing on the Chiller Channel in the U.S. For the last month or so, and then it comes out domestically in the U.S. in mid-August, and then I know it just came out in the U.K., I believe, a week ago. So it's getting rolled out slowly in different territories. I've never been a filmmaker to go through the festivals. I've just gone straight to distributors.
Okay.
So I've just felt the festival route, it's just going to take years, and there's no guarantees with that. So I felt like, you know, Chiller keeps airing the Bunny Man film, so, you know, and there's millions of people that can see that, and that's way more than if I go to some random festival in the Midwest with 10 people in the audience.
That's
so
true.
I felt this for brand awareness and building the franchise, because we just finished part three. We just wrapped it a week ago. So,
oh, wow.
You know,
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. So you haven't seen The Last of Bunny Man, that's for sure.
Okay, perfect. So obviously your feedback, the feedback you've been receiving with these movies has been, motivating enough to continue on the franchise. And I thought that was an interesting fact that you just mentioned, that sometimes you really have to weigh how important a festival run is for your film and how much more important, distribution is, or just having more people see your film. And you're right. I guess some, you know, you see more the festival runs more with short films. It's much more difficult to see it with feature films unless it's big festivals. So I guess I do understand your point of view. And at the end of the day, it's more for recognition rather than a big audience of people seeing your film. So I'm sure you've had your experience with that. We're speaking a lot about The Bunny Man, but you are currently in production with for other films. Obviously, you just mentioned Bunny Man 3. There's also Blood Angel. Can you give a little insight about, your position in those movies?
Yeah. Bunny Man 3 came about because Part 2, I was more successful at it, and I felt like there was a little bit more story to tell, and there wasn't really a history or backstory on the Bunny Man character. So I felt that, and then I got some access to some really interesting locations. So that kind of just pushed me forward with part three. But then having just wrapped part three, I feel like I've done everything I can with the giant bunny. Maybe it just took me three movies. Yeah, it took me three movies to get it out of my system, but I feel as though I've kind of, you know, gone through this territory and done everything. I've said everything I want to say with that film. So next up is Blood Angel, and that's just a different aesthetic. That's very, you know, Bunny Man films are very Texas chainsaw, horror, dirty, Midwest, kind of just grungy type films. And so Blood Angel is a very, like, sleek, film noir, sexy, violent. It's still within the horror genre, but it's a very different aesthetic. All filmed at night, rainy. So it's even though it's within the horror genre, it's a complete 180 from Bunny Man. So that's next, but I'm still recuperating after a week of after finishing the film. I'm fried mentally, so it's kind of hard to jump into the pool with both feet with Blood Angel. But that'll be next year for sure.
Well, I bet. I mean, you really haven't had a break from the series. I mean, the first Bunny Man released in 2011, I mean, it's only been about 4 years technically, and you just, you know, you just finished wrapping up the franchise, so the series. So I'm sure that in between writing, would you write each script after the one movie, or was it something that you had already had written out before you began productions of the three parts?
Well, usually a lot of inspiration of each Spider-Man film is doing, not only improving what I failed at the first time, but things that I never got around to filming the previous movie I'd throw into the next movie. So there was quite a lot of stuff that I wanted to do in 2 that I never did. So that got thrown into part 3. And then I found some locations that were interesting. So then I kind of just wrote the script around what it was available to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it came about, was just, this is the location. We've got 3 weeks to shoot here. What kind of story can you tell? So that's how it came about. But, yeah, inspiration comes at any moment, watching something, and then I start taking notes, and then I obsess over it, and then those notes form into a treatment, and then that forms into the script. So I never quite know where the next idea is coming from, but they're always in my head.
Well, as a creative person, I bet it's something that you can't even help, and I bet that ideas just fly at you, and you get the urge to write it down or get a wild idea. What sometimes I find, you know, I'm just when you choose an actor for this sort of genre, is there a certain quality that you always look for, whether it be in their acting technique or physique or anything like that, you know, to be a part of these kind of films?
So the phone was breaking up. What was that? Is there any specific things I look at
yes.
as an actor?
Yes. Is there any, like, you know, things, specific things that you look for in an actor's technique or physique to be part of these, to be part of this horror genre? Because, you know, not everybody is great with horror, you know, especially actors. So what is that one thing that you look for, or, you know, multiple things?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost is their acting ability. Do I, when I give them sides, do I believe that those sides, do I believe in their emotions, what they're trying to convey? So that's first and foremost. The second is, I tell everyone in the casting process that we're filming in hot conditions, dirty, spiders, very little sleep. Like, we're really, really roughing it. And so I want to make sure that the actors are team players and will work hard and view this as an opportunity to show their worth to millions of people. And so that has always been my criteria, are people easy to work with. And Bunny Man 3, we wrapped, but we had one actor who quit the second week. And then he tried to blackmail us for thousands of dollars to come back. So that was obviously... Someone vouched for him, so I thought he was cool. You know, I thought he was an honest person, but it takes a real dick to try to blackmail production with 20 people working on a film for the last 6 months, and the actor just decided to try to shake us down. So we didn't negotiate with a terrorist, so to speak. We just kind of changed the script a little, and honestly, I think we're better for it. But that does happen where am I allowed to curse on this show or not?
If you can find an alternative word, it would be better.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes you have idiots that come along, and unfortunately we came across an idiot. And so, you know, we're better for it having gone through it, but it's still... Going forward from now on, I really need to make sure that we only work with honest people that have good work ethic and not someone who's trying to just be
get
an
over.
Ass, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and think about it, like you said, you're better off without it because now, you know, you just killed off the dude. You just kill him off. You don't, it's easier that way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we could have paid him, and then the next week he could have tried to get more money. So we only had to reshoot one scene, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a huge issue, but, you know, it was just, okay, this person's bad news. How do we get out of it? And so that was it.
So, you know, that is one of the production goes through many difficult stages, and sometimes dealing with the cast is one of them. Has that been, like, the only, I guess, like, very difficult, not difficult position, but very frustrating position, as you know, as a director and the producer of the film, that you've been put in this franchise?
Was that with actors?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, other production issues other than this last issue?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, the original Bunny Man, we had rented some film equipment, and then the guy said up and down, left and right, that it worked. And so when we got it and we were shooting, and then on the weekend up in the mountains, it broke down on us. And so we lost a couple of days of filming, and we had to find another alternative route to finish the film with a different camera. So, you know, we've had camera equipment break down on us. So, you know, every film there's, you know, people are, I shoot in Riverside, so it's a little bit outside of LA County, so it's a little easier to deal with permits and stuff, but you still get, you know, you still get harassed about film permits, and people, now, ironically, people are recognizing Bunny Man. So when we're trying to film, we have people coming up and talking to us about Bunny Man. So that is a good problem to have. But, you know, there's always, every day there's some kind of challenge that is unforeseen.
Definitely. And now that you mentioned that, you do shoot there in Riverside. I guess that when you were saying that it gets hot and dirty, that's one of them. What about this bunny suit? Is this the same suit that you've been using since the first movie?
I heard the last part, something about the suit, the bunny man suit.
The bunny man suit. Is this the same suit you've been using since the first part of the movie?
Yeah, no, the first one, I was worried about continuity, so I always wanted the suit completely white and clean, and then it looked cheesy. So then by part two, when that came around, it got very dirty. And I'm like, okay, well, this is the way to go. So continuity's sake, it's always dirty. And then part three, as the years go by, it's just the costume's falling apart. It's getting dirty. Blood is inevitably getting sprayed on it. It's left in storage for a year or two between films. So it's – and I refuse to wash it. So it is the same suit. I don't, you know, even if it started falling apart, we would probably stitch it together and keep using it just because aesthetically it looks better, dirty and worn. But yeah, the gloves are disintegrating, and so we'll probably have to get new gloves by the next time. But yeah, it's the same suit, and there's only one suit, so.
Well, that's definitely creative, because you're right, because, I mean, in real life, you know, if there is or was a bunny man, I doubt that he would really take the time to wash his suit every night after he does a killing spree. So I guess leaving the whole filthy aspect of the suit really does give it a touch to the character. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention, you know, perhaps to other fellow filmmakers that have gone through the certain hardships that you've gone through, or just, you know, any words of advice that you would really say to an upcoming filmmaker, even if it's of the horror genre?
Yeah, I think there's a couple, actually. The first being that just make your movie with whatever means you have. I'm talking as a producer now, that there's a lot of people I run across that are producers, and they say, well, I'm going to make a movie, and I'm trying to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then years go by, and they're still looking for that money. And I think they feel to realize that, and especially with the Bunny Man films, is I don't wait until I have a magical number that I've randomly pulled out of my ass to make a film. I make a movie with the means I have. And so if you're aspiring to make a movie, if you've got $10, well, you make a movie with $10. Like, if you have this arbitrary number, this budget that you need or to make a movie, it's like you're never going to get it. The conditions are never going to be ideal. You're never going to have enough money And I think that's true for even the biggest of films. Like, you can always use more time. You can always use more money. So I think, as cliche as it is, it's like you just do it. You just make a movie. If this is what you have, then this is how you make it. And, you know, God knows Buddy Madden would have been better if I had more money. But, you know, if I mean, as using the mythology of most people, like, I'd still be waiting for money to make that movie now if I hadn't just gone and done it. And now I have three films under my belt in the franchise. So just make the movie with whatever means you have. As I think that's the main thing I can impress on aspiring filmmakers, is just do it, go out and do it.
You know, and more I see director producers, especially, you know, independent filmmakers, because of that, because, you know, most have to come out of pocket and they can't, you know, and it's hard, and there's so many fundraisers, and every production wants to do their Indiegogo or FundMe or whatever these upcoming funding websites are, you know? So it's hard to even, you know, get the full support of the public or of your followers and stuff like that. So I do see more and more director producers. I'm not sure if everybody can handle that pressure, though, you know? But obviously, you've done a great job at it, and I'm sure you have a great team in your production company. But
oh yes, that was one thing. A little bit of advice is that, you know, with filmmakers, and maybe this is just what I've gone through, but I just came off of a month shoot, and you know, it's very, very hard mentally and physically, and you know, you have, even if you have only 12-hour days, the rest of the day, every waking moment is consumed by making this film, and then you have maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep at night. So The whole filmmaking process, it's like it's going to try to break you. Like, it'll chew you up and spit you out and try to, like, basically make you want to throw up your arms and quit. Like, it's very, very hard. It's just survival mode. It's going to war. It's like, it sucks, and you just pull up your boots and you just get through it. And so I think a lot of people need to realize that this is not fun summer camp. You get to go relax and be creative. It's like, that's 1%. The rest of it is full on war, and you have to, every day someone's trying to shut you down. Every day it feels like the world and the weight is on your shoulders, and they're just trying to be against you to make a movie. So you just need to push hard and push through it and get the movie made. So I think that needs to be really impounded on people's heads, that if you take this lightly, and you think this is just fun, oh, I'm going to go make a movie, it's going to end really badly for you. You need to go and prepare it and have contingency plans and know everything is going to go wrong, and you need to be calm and collected and have plan Bs and try to work around stuff. So sorry to go on that tangent, but movie making is hard, and you have to realize that too.
Yeah, definitely. And something I mean, you know, it's big and small. Like, this past thing that you had with an actor wanting to back more production. I mean, and you guys, I mean, if I don't know if it took long it took you, but you pretty much thought on your feet. You were like, well, what's the best route that we can take? And, you know, and you took care of it. You weren't going to stop all the production for a month because a guy is blackmailing you, you know? You got to think fast. So,
I mean, I was just more determined to make a better film than make him suffer for pulling out. And, you know, it only motivates me to do better. It doesn't really scare me in any way.
Well, I hope not, because you're a horror flick genius. So I hope it doesn't scare you. Can you tell us where we can find your films? If, you know, the first one, I'm not sure if it's still available on DVD. This one that will be coming out, the second title will be coming out in August. Where can people find it or buy it or watch it?
Yeah, with Bunny Man 2, I'm still getting back to the real world after filming. So from what I've been told, you can add Bunny Man to Netflix, Bunny Man 2. And then Bunny Man Massacre, Bunny Man 2 is the same movie, but we just called it Bunny Man Massacre. So you can add it to your Netflix queue. You can go on Amazon and buy it. You can watch it on Chiller Channel right now. Although, you know, Chiller Channel has 20 minutes cut out to all the gore. And then it has, I think, there's probably about a couple hours of extras on the DVD. So it is worth trying to track down for the extras. If you really want to learn about how, what it's like to make an indie horror film with a very small crew in a very short time span, all the extra, I put the extras on there to kind of show you what it's like to make a film of this nature and the challenges of doing it and some of the problems we ran into. So if you're in Europe, it's out now on DVD, U.S. next month on Netflix or Amazon. Or, of course, I encourage you to buy it. So.
Of course, that'd be great. And you guys do have a Facebook page too, where I see that you've kept updated even with the Bunnymen 3 and Blood Angel. You're really up to date with your Facebook page.
Oh yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, you can always follow us on Facebook and add us and like us, and those are up to date way more than. And I do have a website, anocproductions.com. And you can find out more information on that, although it's not as updated as Facebook.
Yeah. But, Carl, I'd like to thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it. Thank you for that insight, you know, and your tips. And it's very important. And I know you're a busy man, but anytime you come across a filmmaker, you know, it's cool to, like, give them the heads up in certain things, even though some people don't listen. Because I've been there, done that. You know, they ask for advice and they still do whatever they want. But it's good to give your advice and your experiences.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they don't listen, I mean, they're going to learn the hard way. So it's I've always found it to be listen to people who've been through this before and kind of take their advice and kind of learn from their mistakes as opposed to make your own. But yeah, no, I'm still learning. So I'll be the first to admit I don't know much, but what I do know, I'm able to make movies. So
That's great. So once again, Carl, thank you for your time. I wish you much continued success with the series and your upcoming Blood Angel.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Carl Lindberg. He is a director, producer, mostly known for the Bunnyman Massacre. It's a series of, now you heard it, three films, the second, which is going to be released in the U.S. mid-August, he said, I think. And the third, they just wrapped, so Lord knows, we'll probably see that next year. And Blood Angel is coming up, horror genre thing, but with a little twist and sexy stuff and blood, I bet. So there you have it. Make sure to keep up with us through the SashaMarinaShow.com or Facebook, the Sasha Marina Show. Also, Twitter and Instagram. Mostly on Twitter. Instagram is more of my stuff or mixed, my double life. And make sure to download that app, the Sasha Marina Show, on Google Play and BlackBerry World, of course. So thank you and bye-bye.